was a bacher in Volozhin who he later became a gadol. He was a very, very well-known gadol. But he was steiging, and Rav Chaim Volozhiner got a letter that his bacher's father was ill and he should come home. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner didn't show him, didn't tell the bacher what the letter at all. The father was nifter, didn't tell the bacher at all. The mother was sending letters every week or every day saying, gotta come home. You know, and every situation is worse. We have to sell the store. We have to move out of the house. We have to move into the street. We need you. Come. Rav Chaim Volozhiner collected 2 years of letters. He wasn't Mardia the bacher at all. At the end of the time, the bacher had made a siyum on Bavli Yerushalmi Be'in, and he thought he knew everything. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner called him in and said, I want to show you all the letters that were coming to me. And he says, there is no end to what the Eitzahara is going to do to take a person away from Torah. The emes is, what you did for your father's neshama is much, much greater than anything you would have done by coming back or whatever it would be. And Mimele, the Eitzahara created a whole thing about your father dying. So it could be that the Eitzahara doesn't want you to hear about Rav Kook and about Sionists and Zionism. So who knows? All sorts of people. Okay. Anyway. No. Most students probably got whatever news they had to get. But this Talmud, he held that this Talmud shouldn't share. Now, I heard from my own Rosh Hashiva that my own Rosh Hashiva also was not told about a parent's patira for a while. The Alter Sabbatka didn't want him to know. Yeah. Okay. Because last week we also started talking about Rav Kook, and most guys were at a chasna. I'm not sure if anybody taped last week's year, if they could tell me about it. I don't remember. There were very few people, but maybe whoever was here. No, I know that, but if anyone taped it, anyone has taped it or a video. Okay. Anyway, we're going weiter, and the Derech Klal, we're focusing on all types of different streams of Zionism. It comes in many, many flavors. Political Zionism, cultural Zionism, religious Zionism of the Messianic variety and of the non-Messianic variety, and then Zionism which is focused on statehood, and Zionism that is just focused on Yishuv Eretz Israel without the union of statehood. And we mentioned last week that the Gra did actually have, although the Gra did not necessarily advocate statehood, he never mentioned anywhere about Yidden having a Medina. But in the Sefer Kael HaTor, the Talmidim of the Gra are Mayid, that the Gra held that the inyan of Binyan Ha'aretz is the Bechina of Mashiach ben Yosef, which is necessary to bring a Mashiach ben David. And there's a certain Geula B'derech HaTeva in which Yidden have to come back to Eretz Yisrael, and Yidden have to be actively Mishtatev in creating cities and fields and everything in Eretz Yisrael, and Menela, when they show the Chibas Ha'aretz, that's Ma'ayrer, the Geula from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is called Geula B'derech HaTeva. Now, remember two things about this. Even though this puts the Gra in the direction of certain aspects of Zionism, keep in mind that there are a number of important points that the Gra did not go as far as stating. Number one, as I said before, the Gra did not talk, at least, about a Medina. Now, he didn't say a Medina was Usher, else the Shalosh Shores. He didn't say it was Usher. But when he describes the Indian of Binyan Ha'aretz, he was not talking about political sovereignty. He was talking about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. He's machriya l'halacha like the Ramban, that it's a mitzvah saseh, and not like Rav Moshe. The Gra says it's a mitzvah chiyuvis, not like Rav Moshe learned. And he talks about the Indian of physically building the land as a chaluk of Yishuv Ha'aretz, but he does not talk about statehood per se. That's one point. A second point is that, as you would expect logically, the Gra was of course Kalel of equal and greater importance, the Ruchniyistik in Yadav. In other words, for Shtetzef, the Gra says you come to Eretz Yisrael, you learn, you do tefillah, you create chesed, Abbas Yisrael. So he was not a Zionist in the sense of just elevating the physical aspects of Eretz Yisrael. The Shtetzef, it had to be Nichlal with Ruchnius, and Ruchnius was the Iker. But it can't be denied that indeed the Gra did consider him to be a great Chachivas in physically building up Eretz Yisrael. The other thing is that the Gra nowhere supports any type of hischabrus with Rishoyim or Parkeyel. In other words, the Gra did not say, so let's work with all the other non-religious people that are building up Eretz Yisrael. He rather envisioned the concept that people who were Maminim would come to Eretz Yisrael together and they would do all of this work. So you can't really put the Gra, you know, in the Dati Liumi camp yet. But the one nekuda that is important is that indeed the Kol HaTorah, he is Mishabeach the Inyan of Binyan Aretz. And not only outs the Ramban looking at it mitam mitzvah, although he does look at it mitam mitzvah, but in a much more mystical way, it's a heichi timtza to be makarev the geula. That's a new nekuda, right? That's not, the Ramban never said it. The Ramban says it's a mitzvah of Yishev Eretz Yisrael. The Gra says this is Mashiach ben Yosef, and Mashiach ben Yosef is the Tanai before Mashiach ben David. Okay, so that's an important insight. As I indicated, the Sefer Kol HaTorah was written by a Talmud, Rav Hillel of Shklov. There were people who claimed it was a Ziyaf. Mainly Haredim claimed it was a Ziyaf. They said the Maskilim forged something in the name of the Gra to give it legitimacy, especially his references to secular studies and other things. But Rav Chaim Friedlander was Derish V'chaiker, and he came to the Maskana that it does represent the genuine teachings of the Gra himself. Okay. Now, I'm going to move now to talk a little bit about Rav Kook, just so you should at least know such a person existed. You're not going to hear about him too much. And Rav Kook was Avram Yitzchak HaKayin Kook, was a Litvish Rav. He was born in Lita in the middle of the 1800s, middle of the 19th century. He was a Talmud of Volozhin at the time of the greatest height of Volozhin, when the Netziv was the head Rosh Hashiva, and Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was the Mishnah Lamelech, and people took sides. Bukharim tended to gravitate to one or the other. As you might guess, Rav Kook was closer to the Netziv than he was to Rav Chaim. And the Netziv, as you know, was also had a very positive attitude towards the Inyanim of Yishev Haaretz. The Netziv also had less of a reluctance in being Mechaber, even with people who weren't religious, if it was for a good tayelis. He was not so machner on those Inyanim. In fact, in the Hamik Davar, which is the Netziv's Perish Al Chumash, and it's interesting, you know how the Hamik Davar was written. The Netziv was both the Rosh Hashiva Volozhin, and he was the Rav of Volozhin. The Netziv was the Rav of the Shtetl of Volozhin. Now, the Rav has a certain achrayas to Balabatim. What can he do? He's in charge of the world's biggest yeshiva. He really didn't have a lot of time for the shtetl. But his achrayas was that every day after shachris, he would go to the main shul, not in the yeshiva, the main shul, and he would give a chumash here for half an hour to the Balabatim. He would go over an aliyah of chumash with the Balabatim. And the notes from those shiurim became the Hamik Davar. Right? This was how the Netziv was Mekayim, his achrayas as the Rav of Volozhin. So in the Hakdama of the Hamik Davar to Sefer Devarim, the Netziv talks about the Maimer Chazal that the Mikdash was Nechrav, the Mikdash Sheni was Nechrav because of Sinas Chinam. So the Netziv says, what was the Sinas Chinam of the Bayis Sheni? I'm just quoting the Netziv. The Netziv says that in the Bayis Sheni, there were a lot of different kitos. There were a lot of different sects. Sadukim, all sorts of different groups there. So he says, the Sinas Chinam of the Bayis Sheni was everybody was looking at everybody else and labeling them as Chayfrim and Apikorsim. In other words, it was a Sinas Chinam that was Neveya from the notion that only I have the Derech HaTorah. And other Jerachim are Treif, other Jerachim are Chutz L'machim. And Hagam, that each person might have thought their Kabbana was L'Shem Shemayim. In reality, if you're not open to be Makabo, the potential Emes, in another Shita, it says, that does say Sinas Chinam. Which means, the problem with Sinas Chinam is, the Netziv says, the person that has Sinas Chinam doesn't think it's Chinam. He thinks he's right. He thinks it's legitimate. But Ali B'Diemis, if you go through a deeper din b'cheshvan, you see that you have to be makabel the fact that there can be emes coming in different places. Now again, this is not embracing reform or other things, but even within its tightness, that the Sinas Chinam was a tremendous avla. And this was an attitude that Rav Kook was very much united to as a Talmud of the Netziv. The Netziv said on more than one occasion, and this is documented by many, many Talmudim, that he considered Rav Kook to be his greatest Talmud in Volozhin. Rav Kook became a Rav in Lita, al pi the Eitz of the Chafetz Chaim, who gave him the advice to go into Rabbanus, etc. Eventually, Rav Kook came to Eretz Yisrael. He came to Eretz Yisrael as the Rav of the relatively small city of Yaffa. Yaffa was the port city. Tel Aviv wasn't invented yet. Now Yaffa was just a little tiny thing. But Yaffa was a major port in Palestine, as it was called. There was no such thing as Tel Aviv. And he was the Rav of Yaffa. He left Eretz Yisrael shortly before World War I, to address the Aguda Convention in Germany or Austria. And because of the outbreak of World War I, he was not allowed to re-enter Eretz Yisrael for 5 years. So 5 years. He had been in Eretz Yisrael around 10 years. And for 5 years, literally, he was in Gullus. He was not able to return to his family or return to Eretz Yisrael for the whole duration of the war. Part of that time he spent in Switzerland. Part of that time he spent in London. So he was a Rav both in Switzerland and in London. He finally got back to Eretz Yisrael. When he got back to Eretz Yisrael, at that point, there were a large group of people, and I'll talk about the Misnagdim against them, who wanted him to become Rav of Yerushalayim, not Chief Rabbi of Israel. There was no position. Rav of Yerushalayim. At that point, there were many Misnagdim who did not want him to be Rav of Yerushalayim, Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, Rav Dushinsky, and the like. Eventually, he became Rav of Yerushalayim, even though they were not mekabel him. And towards the last 10 years or so of his life, he occupied a position that was called the Rav HaRashi or Rosh HaRabbanim Yisrael. Again, Israel is under the British mandate, and he was officially, at least, the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. Once again, some were mekabelim, some were not mekabelim. He died in the 1930s. Well before the establishment of the State of Israel. So he was never the chief rabbi of the State of Israel. There was no State of Israel. But his official title was chief rabbi of Palestine under the British mandate. There's a very cute... Maybe I shouldn't say this. But when you had the British High Commissioners, Herbert Samuel and all those fellows, all the streets are named after and the like... So there's a YouTube from the 1920s, amazing, where Rav Kook and Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld show up at a reception. And they both show up together, Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, right? And Lady Samuel, Herbert Samuel's wife, a Jewish woman, like sticks out her hands. And Rav Kook looks like in a total state of shock. And he didn't take it, but Rav Kook's like, and Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld is actually grinning. He walks around Rav Kook and kind of bypasses. It's very interesting that he managed to escape it by just walking around. So anyway, okay. So let me talk a little bit about what Rav Kook did in Eretz Yisrael and what his shittas were. Rav Kook was a prolific writer, whether it was Chiddushei Torah, whether it was Tshuvas, whether it was Hashkafa, whether it was poetry, whether it was Kabbalah, and the like. He was not a chassid, but he was very mekusher to chassidus. On his mother's side, comes from a Chabad mishpacha. And in terms of machshava, the ikar sources which dominated his machshava was the Netziv, the Balatanya, and the Sfas Emes. These were netiyas that were very, very powerful in his machshava. He had a great avas, Eretz Yisrael. He had a great mystical sense that because he was a kayin, he had very, very strong hargushas about Geula and the Binyan Beis HaMikdash and the Inyan of Avaida. Now, when he would learn Kutshin, he would cry, even as a child, because he would feel the Ishtaikikus, the desire to be connected to this Avaida. It was a very, very serious thing, the notion of Kahuna, the notion of Geula, the notion of Binyan Beis HaMikdash, the notion of Bi'as HaOretz, which is, again, I'll pee the Gra, the Kol HaTor, if this was a chalak of the union of Mashiach ben Yosef. The first thing you have to know about Rav Kook, and this is Rav Shlomo Zalman said this, Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer said this, Rav Yoshev says this, that he was a Gain B'chala Torah Kula. A Gain B'chala Torah Kula is Bavli, Yerushalmi, Shulchan Aruch, Halacha, Agadita, and Kabbalah. In fact, it's been said by people outside of the Dati Leumi camp that he might have been, perhaps, the last Gain that knew Kol HaTorah Kula. When I say Kol HaTorah Kula, I mean I'm including Agadita, Medrash, Kabbalah, and the like. Not just Halacha, which means there may have been, and of course there probably were, Paiskim who might have been greater in pure Halacha. But he might have been the last Gadol with a Hekif that was so big. By the way, the one before him who was said to have that Hekif was the Nitziv. So it fit. The Nitziv was a tremendous, tremendous Baki. B'chol Chadrei HaTorah, Dikta, Tanakh, all of these in Yonim. In Yafo, Rav Kook, you know, Yafo was basically a hick town. I mean, it was an important port, but there weren't that many Jews in Yafo. And Rav Kook had a very, you know, simple life. He was doing mainly learning. Most of the people of Yafo were not even from. And he was makar of them on a one-to-one basis. And it gave him plenty of time. And the truth of the matter is, Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, who became Rav Kook's good friend, always called him the Yafo Rav, even when he was the Chi, because he says, you know, Yafo was good. Rav Kook was very good in Yafo. That was that's where he belonged, to work one-to-one with non-religious Jews. He was very, very good. He was he had a personality which was a very loving personality, very gentle personality, and it worked well. Just Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld felt he should have come to Yerushalayim. Rav Kook first got in trouble, so to speak, notoriety, over a halachic issue. And that, of course, is the famous Hetcher Mechira. The Hetcher Mechira was the inyan that Shemitah comes. You're not allowed to farm the land. In those days, much of the yishuv depended on agriculture. And importing was very expensive. It wasn't that common as it is today. And Rav Kook was not the first one. Was not the first one who developed this Hetcher, but Rav Kook implemented the Hetcher where Jewish farmers would be permitted to sell their land to Goyim, like Mechiras Chametz, and the Mela that would matir Avayda Sakarka during Shemitah. And Rav Kook held that the Hetcher Mechira was justified because otherwise there would be a matzav of Pikuach Nefesh. Now one should realize that when Rav Kook promulgated the Hetcher, some of that was actually very, very true. Around World War I and before and afterwards, there were thousands of Jews who died of starvation. This was not an abstract point. Rav Kook saw bodies of people dying in the streets. And Mimela, his yisayit is the following. Let me explain in a little bit more lumbus what the Hetcher Mechira is based on. The Hetcher Mechira is based on two yisayitas in halacha. Yisayit number one is Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is Drabana. Ruba Deruba of Paiskin. In fact, even the Badat, all Paiskin today follow the Hadracha that Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is Drabana. And the reason is because Shemitah the Araisa depends on Yaivel. Yaivel depends on most of the Yidden being in Eretz Israel. At least most of the Shvatim, since we don't have that yet, although we're close to it, actually, what's going to happen then? It'll be an interesting question. But we don't have Rav Yeshveha, no Yaivel, no Shemitah. Shemitah's Drabana. All right, so what? It's still Drabana. Yesait number two. On Mitzvah's Drabana, we paskin, Yesh Kinyin La'akum, Lahafkia, Midei Mitzvah's Liyazvah. There's a machlegis in the Gemara. If a goy's ownership of karka in Eretz Yisrael is mafkia the karka from Kedushas Haaretz. If I hold ein kinyan, the ownership of a goy is not mafkia. If I hold yesh kinyan, the ownership of a goy is mafkia. The Rambam paskins that legabe mitzvah drabanan, the kinyan of a goy is mafkia. So Rav Kook basically says, Since Rav Paiskim say Shemitah Bizman Hazah is the Rabbanan, number one. And number two, Legabe Mitzvah the Rabbanan we Paskin, a Goy's Kinyan is Mafkia. So Mimela, on the land that is sold to a Goy, there's no halakhas of Shemitah. There's no Kedushas, which means two things. You're allowed to work the land, and the peros that grow don't have the laws, don't have the Kedusha Shemias, the restrictions of Shemitah. Now, those are the two Yesaitas. Now, the one thing you have to know is, those two Yesaitas, Bizman Hazah, are makubal by everybody, including the Eid of Haredes. Because, what does the Eid of Haredes sell you? They sell you Yavol Nachri. What's Yavol Nachri? Yavol Nachri are peros bought from the Arabs. What's the heter of buying peros from the Arabs? It's based on exactly this heter. Yesh kinyan l'nachri l'havkia. The only one that didn't hold of that heter happens to be the Chazanish. The Chazanish taka doesn't hold of that heter. Like the Chazanish, yavol nachri is no good. Ah, so the question is, well, wait a second. So why are we against the heter mechira? I mean, for care. If all the heter mechira is doing is being soymech on yesh kinyan li'akum l'havkia, that's exactly yavol nachri. So in principle, the Hetra Mechira is exactly what Yavol Nachri is, but the reason why there was a lot of hisnagdus to it was that unlike land that is actually owned by the Arabs, this was seen by many as a harama, this was seen as a pretense, this was seen as a fake, in which Jewish farmers would simply sign a paper saying my land belongs to the Arab, and then they would be Isa Kitaich Shalai, and therefore it really wasn't a Mechira. Meaning, in principle, if it's a Mechira, it would be good. The problem was, it wasn't a real Mechira. Of course, the question is, by Chametz people behave that way as well. And the other Taina was that it is usher to sell land to a Goy in Eretz Israel, because there's a law in the Torah called Lo Sechanen, which Chazal interpret, you're not allowed to sell land to a Goy. So if an Arab owns land, he owns land, it's for folly. But what type of heter do we have as Yidden to sell land to Goyim? It's an Isser of Lo Sechanim. Now, the Chazanish later added a very interesting Nekuda. It's really a Chap. The Chazanish Tainus, if selling land to a Goy in Eretz Yisrael is a lav of Lo Sechanim, that would be mevatel the mechira l'gamri, because the land is sold to goyim through a shaliach. In other words, you make the rabbanut your shaliach to sell the land. But if selling land is an avera, it's ein shaliach l'dvar avera. So the Chazanish went one step further. Not only is the mechira an avera, but it's not even going to work because it's ein shaliach l'dvar avera.
It would also make it a deraisa on the rama.
Say again.
It would also make it a deraisa on the rama.
Which Rambam are we talking about?
Well, we
still pass, but we pass in Shemitah's Rabbanan. I mean, we're not Machmir Shemitah's Deir Eis.
But that the Goy can take possession of it.
Yeah.
That might be true about the Rabbanan, but if the selling of the land would be a Deir Eis, though.
No, that still wouldn't be a problem, because the selling of the land might be an issue. But legabe the inyanim of kedusha saaretz, right? If you're talking about the hafka of shemitah, that would still be a drab on it, even if los sechanim is drab. So. Say what? Yeah. So I'll talk about that for a second. So because of a variety of these reasons, the heter mechira in Eretz Yisrael was a source of tremendous controversy, and as you know, most of the yeshivish haredi world does not accept, although they accept Yavol Nachri, except for the Chazanish. We accept Yavol Nachri. I mean, that even the Badats accept Yavol Nachri 100%. In other words, they accept 90% of Rav Kook's Yesodos, but they don't accept the formalized, the Heter Mechira. Now, the Rabbanut to this day still uses the Heter Mechira, although they've tried to make it a little tougher. They've tried to tell farmers that you can't do everything. You know, they try to be mamayit in what type of malachas can be done. And one of the questions that exists today is that even Rav Kook might not have matured a Hetzer Mechira today. Because Rav Kook's, his yesod in maturing a Hetzer Mechira, with all of his lumdus, was ultimately based on Pikuach Nefesh as well. And that's Pashut not the matzav today. I mean, of course it's not the matzav today, because Kama Vakama farmers aren't Soymech on the Hetzer Mechira, and we collect money for them, or whatever it is. We do different things. I mean, nobody's dropping dead of starvation because they're not working during Shemitah. So that's a whole other type. I mean, that's not Rav Kook's fault, so to speak. This is but basically his chachos of the Hetzer Mechira, which is still followed today, might be a development that he himself would not have been makabel. Be it as it may, as the Rav of Yafo, he actually wrote a whole sefer. Giving the yesodos of the Hetzer Mechira and trying to answer every kasha. So you could argue with him, and the Gedolim would argue with him, but Lamaisa, he was aware of every nakuda. He addressed Lo Seichanan, he addressed the Indian of Harama, he discusses whether Shemitah is the Oraisa or Drabanan, which that part people are Makabo, he discusses Yesh Kenyan or Ein Kenyan, he discusses every possible nakuda, and he comes to his maskana that B'makam, the difficulties of Eretz Yisrael, this would be much. So truth of the matter is, this was controversial. In those days, most of the religious farmers were Seimech on the Hetzer Mechira. It is only with the advent of the Chazon Ish that the tide begins to change. And just to give you a sense of what's going on, Rav Kook came to Yafo in the beginning of the 1900s, and then for 5 years he was gone, and the like. The Chazon Ish came in the early 1930s, around 5 years before Rav Kook was nifter. And I'll talk about the relationship of the Chazon Ish and Rav Kook. It's an interesting relationship. But one doesn't realize that the Chazon Ish was a tremendous pioneer in the hanhagas of the Frum world in Eretz Yisrael, that until the Chazon Ish, the average Frum farmer and the Frum consumer was 100% Seimech on the Hetzer Mechira, and the Chazon Ish was Meshaneh. And you have to understand, for the Chazon Ish to be Meshaneh this, you have to know, it was not just halachic analysis. I mean, the Chazon Ish was involved in collecting money, arranging imports, arranging all different eifanim of economic support. In other words, he can't just give you a psak halacha and tell people, no, you're going to starve to death because you're not allowed to do this. I mean, the Chazon Ish was mamish instrumental in creating the whole network that allows people to be supported or have their support during the Shemitah year. So now, many people still follow the Hetzer Mechira, but by and large, kibbutzim or moshavim that are from, by and large, are not signed up to the Hetzer Mechira anymore, and that's kimat single-handedly, the pool of the Chazon Ish, starting really from the late 1930s, after Rav Kook was nifter, until the Chazon Ish was nifter in 1954.
Did they ever
meet? Yes, I'm going to discuss that and the like. Now, so that already created controversy. I mean, Lamaisa was a machlekes in halacha, but that already was a bit of a controversy. But what got more controversial is Rav Kook was Isaac very much with non-religious Zionists in a variety of ways, to be mechazek them, to encourage them. And this was also something very controversial. I just want to mention, you had just asked if the Chazon Ish met Rav Kook. They actually did. The Chazon Ish came to Eretz Yisrael. It was towards the end of Rav Kook's life. And the Chazon Ish Bedafka, as you know, didn't want to settle in Yerushalayim. He wanted to go to a new place, Bnei Brak, that didn't have a lot of established institutions, because he wanted to create a moshav, a city, Al Tiras HaKadesh, that didn't have anything else going on, but he did come to Yerushalayim once. He was only in Yerushalayim twice in his whole life. Even as he didn't go, but one time he went to hear Rav Kook speak, and it is recorded that he stood up, even though there was a seat available. He stood up the whole time that Rav Kook spoke, because he said, "This is Kavod HaTorah, and I'm hearing the Sefer Torah at the door, and I'm mechuyev to stand up." However, it is reported that within a few years, the Chazon Ish had a certain merchak from Rav Kook. At some point, he was makir Rav Kook as a great Talmud Chacham, But the Chilukei Deis in Hashkafa were significant. And it is brought down even that part of why the Chazon Ish never came back to Yerushalayim is he felt if he came to Yerushalayim, he would be mechuyev to be mekabel Rav Kook, go see Rav Kook, mekabel rabbi, and he didn't want to do that. So how come after Rav Kook died he didn't go back to Yerushalayim? Because it's like this. Because he says, if I would go to Yerushalayim after Rav Kook's Petira, people would then know that the reason I didn't go when Rav Kook was alive was because of Rav Kook. That would be a zilzal on Rav Kook. So he says, I won't go back to Yerushalayim at all, so people shouldn't think that the reason I didn't go back was because of Rav Kook, although that was the reason. Okay, it's a little complicated. But that was the Chazon Ish's chashbit. Again, let me point out that Rav Shlomo's the young Yerushalmi Iloyim were very close to Rav Kook. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach was very close to Rav Kook. Rav Elyashiv was very close to Rav Kook. Rav Kook was Rav Elyashiv's Mesader Kedushin, and he was Rav Elyashiv's Shatkin. Rav Arye Levin, the great Yerushalmi Tzaddik, who was very close to Rav Kook, indeed, very much wanted Rav Elyashiv for a son-in-law. Rav Elyashiv refused to get married because he said he had no money, he couldn't support a wife. He says he didn't have a pruta, he couldn't support. So Rav Arye Levin went to Rav Kook and said, can you convince this younger man to get married? And we will take care of it, parnasa-wise, whatever it is. So Rav Kook exerted a lot of pressure and said, this is the right thing to do, etc. And he was beside the Kedushin. In fact, both Rav Elyashiv and Rav Shlomo Zalman, when they refer to Rav Kook, they always call him the Rav. The Rav said, in fact, the one Gati Liumi, that's, you say the Rav, you mean Rav Kook. Sometimes Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook, often the first Rav Kook. Well, the emphasis is the old Yerushalmis, when they say the Rav, that is what they mean, that's how they call Rav Kook. So Rav Kook was very, 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 very respected and admired by many of the young Talmidei Chachamim in Yerushalayim, who later became Gedolim. Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, who was Rav Aaron Cutler's father-in-law, who also came to Eretz Yisrael in the 20s, right? And that's when Rav Aaron became Rosh Hashiva in Kles, because Rav Isser Zalman came to Eretz Yisrael, said about Rav Kook, he says, where everybody else's godless ends is where his godless begins. Right? It's a tremendous thing. So the question becomes, such a great man, so why is he so controversial? Why was the Chazon Ish, who was machshifim as a gadol b'Torah, why was the Chazon Ish marchik, ad kedei kach, that he felt he couldn't even be makabel as panav? Right? What was going on? So here is the thing. Rav Kook was a very unusual mizuk of a person who was a great, great paisik in halacha and a great bucky in shas, but a person who was also a mystic, a makubel, nitiyus towards chassidus. And as a result, that created certain ideas that were very controversial. Ideas that have a shayrish in the Kabbalah of the Gra, but were taken much further. They're mushrish in the litvisha machshavas that were being circulated in Siv and the Gra, but they went further. And the further aspect created a certain amount of confusion and a certain amount of ambiguity. We mentioned the Kol HaTor. The Gra talks about Binyan Oretz as a Mashiach ben Yosef that's Makar of the Geula. Rav Kook was Makabel then. But he went further. Rav Kook had a Shita that sometimes the Inyan of Geula is Mechayev B'dafka, that even those that are Rachig from HaKadosh Baruch Hu will find their connection to God through the activities of Kedusha of B'Yasoret. So he saw in the non-religious or the irreligious or the anti-religious activity that was being involved in building of Eretz Yisrael, he saw that as having a ruchniistic, a spiritual taichim. And he basically said that every Yid who wants to do something for Eretz Yisrael is doing so because of his neshama. Even if he thinks he's doing it for nationalism, even if he thinks he's doing it for politics, even if he thinks he's doing it to be kachol hagoyim, That's what he's telling himself. But in reality, it's coming from the panemius of his neshama. And in Mela, it's holy work. It's good work. It is mitzvah. And we can be mishtatif with him, and we can be mechazik him, and we can consider him an equal player with us in our avodas Hashem. Now, the way he put it is, some people come to Eretz Yisrael because of their relationship to Hashem, but some will come to their relationship to Hashem through their connection to Eretz Yisrael. So he says, secular Zionism was a mystical process by which HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings secular people back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, because of this, he didn't look at the world as being mechaber to Rishayim. He literally didn't look at them as Rishayim. He says, Tinok Shenishba, of course the Chazon Ish also used such a lashon later. Tinok Shenishba, people who are nenas, people who don't understand yet. But like the Berditchever, going back to older Hasidish and things, he saw everything as good. The Yid that farms, you know, even if he's doing it on Shabbat, even for example, I'll give you an example of things that got many people very upset. When Zionist secular groups were doing soccer matches on Shabbos. So there was a big machah, a little Shabbos for Farhesia. But he said, you know, it's an awful thing. And he, by the way, he also made a machah. People don't realize he was meicha on these things. People don't realize he did make machas. But he said, you know, they're doing the wrong thing, but lamaisa, to strengthen your body, to be able to build up the lands, is a good thing too. You have to see the good aspects in what people are doing. So these were things that drive certain kanoim absolutely crazy. And it made it difficult for there to be to work with Rav Kook on these. You know, they just had a different mindset the way they viewed this world. Now let me mention in a more deeper way. It actually is more complicated. The Zayar says that often when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to bring something good into the world, the Keiches HaTumah don't let it in. So in order for certain Kedusha to come into the world, it must come in under the radar. Goodness must come in the guise of something that looks makokal, because then the Satan lets it in. You hear what the Zayar is saying? And this was a fundamental idea. Rav Kook says that, yeah, Zionism had many kilkulim, many perversions, many twists. It sometimes involved kaifrim, and it sometimes involved chilul Shabbos. But he said, that's because the idea of Binyan Ha'aretz was so kadesh that the Keiches HaTumah wouldn't let it in unless it disguised itself in a levush of Ra. But the levush of Ra was only the chitzaynius of an inner panemius of Taif. Now, if you don't fully grasp it, you're in good company. I don't fully grasp it either. But I'm trying to just explain the minds, at least b'miktzas v'namiktzas, the machshava of the way he was viewing the world. He says, this was a tremendous thing to come back to Eretz Yisrael, to build, to be makar of the Geula. But the Keiches HaTumah are not going to let it come in a righteous way like the Vilna Gaon, where a bunch of tzaddikim come and build. But the Keiches HaTumah let it come in, you know, in a way that looks bad, because that looks bad. But it's like a sheep in wolf's clothing, to reverse the metaphor. The Taif, B'etzem, had to be mechusa in Ra in order to have a kiyum, kineged the Keiches HaTumah. But you have to see the panemius of Taif, which is the essence of what was going on. So even something like, I'll give you some examples. You know, he was the Rav of Yerushalayim and then of Eretz Yisrael when the Bezalel Art School started, all of these things, right? So Bezalel Art School. Now, obviously most Haredim, you know, were not particularly excited about the Bezalel Art School. And not only that, but they considered it to be not such a great place. I mean, Pritzus, and what, I don't know what they did with models, whatever they do, you know, it wasn't a front place, it wasn't a following Torah. The people going there were not Shomrei Mitzvahs. And there were Pirtzis and Sneas and the like. Rav Kook wrote a letter, and one of his letters were, people say that a preoccupation with arts is kleinekeit, children's games. And he gave a mushel. Imagine if he was a very poetic writer. Imagine if you had a baby. Or not a baby, let's say a child. And the child had a fever, and the child couldn't eat, and couldn't drink, and couldn't play, and was so zerbrochen and so depressed, and so weak. And then one day, the child starts babbling and playing with his dolls, or her dolls. The parent is going to be so happy. What's the pshat? Aye, playing with dolls is gornish. It's kleinekeit. Why should a parent be so happy? The answer is that the very fact that the child can play shows that it's achieving a certain harchavas hadas, which could then lead to something better. To learning, and davening, and mitzvah. So Rav Kook said, so too. The yid in Golus was so crushed, was so oppressed, was so involved with just living, survival, they couldn't think of other inyan. So Rav Kook said, if they're already thinking about arts, no, these are people who are not religious, then they'll come to think about Torah. In other words, their minds can be open, their hearts can be open, meaning they're not mitzumtzum to the inyanim of survival. Right? So he was very optimistic. In other words, he saw everything. Right? He saw the soccer games on Shabbos. Baruch Hashem, strong bodies can do binyan haaretz. He sees an art school. He says, Baruch Hashem, they're no longer just thinking about business, they're thinking about things beyond survival. So there's a yonim of ruchnis. One of the most infamous incidents is he spoke, although this was misquoted, he really didn't get a fair deal on this, which, you know, common. He spoke at the dedication of Hebrew University in the 1920s. He gave the inaugural, I mean, first of all, his job was he had to speak everywhere, he had to speak in all these places. they didn't ask Rav Zonnenfeld to come. But Rav Kook speaks at the inauguration of Hebrew University. And Hebrew University was controversial. Again, Charedim don't like it now. They certainly didn't like it then. They said, you're starting this university, which is going to have, all right, if it would just teach science and math, you know, no one's going to complain so much. But Bible criticism, looking at Jewish history from a secular perspective, very, very controversial. It is said, B.P. Ashmua, that Rav Kook agreed to talk only on the tenor that they wouldn't teach Bible criticism, which is kfira of Torah Min HaShemayim. Lemaisa, they supposedly, they promised him, and then they backed out, and they did it anyway. But he did speak at the university. He talked about the fact that this could be a makor of chokhmah, like this is an haaretz of him, makor of chokhmah, makor of das, and he ended the speech with the pasuk, ki mitziyayin teitzei sayur. So that absolutely outraged Charedim. I mean, they used this as they vilified him, that he should get up and say, Hebrew University is an illustration of Ki Mitziyayin Teitzei Seira, as if that's a Torah that's coming from Siyayin and the like. Now, the truth of the matter is, if you actually look at the speech, Rav Kook really got an unfair, this was actually a musar he was given. He says, Hagam, that this is a place of Chachma, but you have to remember Ki Mitziyayin Teitzei Seira, that Yerushalayim has to be a Magor. So it was Mamash Pakert. Rav Kook was giving the Musar. He was saying, the Chachma is good, but the Iker has to be Torah. But the way it was construed in the press was, he was calling Hebrew University the source of Torah, and they really, Kanoim were just vilifying him incessantly for all of this. Yeah.
In the letter he wrote for the establishment of Merkaz Arav, didn't he write also something like that? I'm sure the Rebbe read it, but
yeah,
because he was getting such flack for saying something like that. He wrote something in the letter, even for the establishment of his own yeshiva,
yeah,
kind of like a dig at everyone who was kind of giving him a lot of flack.
But the yeshiva was a yeshiva. Merkaz Rav was a yeshiva, and on a yeshiva, it certainly, you can say ki mitziyayin teitzei seira. That's perfectly fine. The taina on him was that people were misconstruing him, that he was saying it about Hebrew University and the like. But again, I want to point out that it's not just, and again, since we're not holding on that machshava, it's hard for us to grasp it. It's not just he was a nice guy. He had a hashkafa that good kedusha sometimes comes into the world under a klipa of ra. And therefore you liberate the taiv when you're makir the taiv even when it's in Ra. So instead of being Merachek, the Ra L'chalutin, which will also destroy the Taiv that is being expressed, you have to be Makir, the Taiv that's covered with the Klipa. And this is Meyisid in the Zohar. In fact, the Zohar says it by Malchus Beis David itself. The Zohar says the following. Look at the Ishtalshalus of Malchus Beis David and B.S. Mashiach. Starting off with Yehuda V'Tamar. Right? Looks like Yehuda was with the prostitutes. And then you have Rus and Bias. Same thing, like Rus comes in the middle of the night with Bias. Right? You have that in you. And then later there was a whole story that David HaMelech, many people thought was a mamzer, that Yishai was Mizana, etc. The whole mice of David HaMelech. And then you have David and Batsheva. Shlomo comes from David and Batsheva. Right? So the concept is that the neshama of Geula could only come in under a guise of what's called a kupa shel shratza. Right? Now, the emes is, all of these things have precedence. The Gra says it. Now, the Gra says an amazing thing. The Gra says, he doesn't say it by Zionism per se, the Gra says it by feminism. The Gra says that the pasuk says in Yirmiyahu, Nikeva to Saivev Gever, a woman shall encircle a man. This is actually one of the makairis for the minag that the kala walks around the chasim. The Gra says, originally, men and women were equal. Because the man is the chama, and the woman is the levana. And originally, the chama and the levana were equal. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mamayeh the levana, this is the Gra says, and Mimela, Kadosh Baruch Hu was Mamayat, as it were, the, again, it's only men here, so we could, he was Mamayat, as it were, the Kayach of woman, to some ways, be subordinate to man, because that was a Niyot of the Kayach Halavan. But, the Gra says, Shteik, Liyasud Lavai, the Or Halavana, will be Ka'or HaChama. This is the Gra. So the Gra says, as you get closer to Yemais HaMashiach, women will become more and more equal to the processes, more and more equal to the achievements of men, because that is the return of the Or HaLavana to Or HaChama.
Where did they get it?
The Gras says, huh?
Where did they get it?
I have to go back to the marker, but now, here's the thing.
The Or HaLavana stays the same.
Huh?
Or Levana hasn't been getting bigger.
Well, yeah, no, that's right. But in Ruchnias, well, that hasn't happened yet. But in Ruchnias, there's a certain shefa. Now, Rav Kook takes that machshava of the Gra, which the Gra does say that. I can get you the makar for that. And Rav Kook used it to analyze, even in his time, which is already early in the 20s and before, various aspects of feminism. And actually, Kalb Chaimer today it's gotten much, much worse than it was in Rav Kook's time. But women wanted to vote. That was the issue then. There were Gedolim that were against women voting. Right? There were Kalb Chaimer against women voting. But now people are not Meicha anymore. But Rav Kook used the Gra to basically say that the Kayach of women to seek greater realization of their potential comes Mitzad HaKadusha. That's the kayach of the Or HaLavana to Or HaChama. But once again, it enters the world in a guise of kilkel. So the particular way that feminists want to achieve something will often be connected to Torah, will often be in a proper way. The same thing as Zionism, the same type of mahalach. But he says,
all the chilul that came along with it. I understand that he believed, theoretically, so to speak, that it's coming all your day, the negative.
So here's the thing. Again, I mean, it's not for me, not for us to sit in judgment on the gadol. I mean, the emes is, that's why I said Rav Kook had a very, very optimistic, hopeful streak in which it was his shita that if you're makir the taiv and you look at the ra as an outside klipa, then it just gets ineffectual and the inner type is going to emerge. He thought, for example, if you were machshiv what the secular Zionists were doing, they would all become from. This was his malach. In other words, you by giving them a legitimacy and a chashivas. Now the emesis, you say Rav Kook was an optimist, so to speak. In other words, you could tie in, well, it didn't quite work that way totally. On the other hand, you can also say maybe things take time and it hasn't happened yet. I mean, there is no question that Kama Vakama, descendants of various secular Jews have become from, right? That's why Orson Meir is here and the like. So the question is, did Rav Kook envision a timetable? Was it shock for him to know? I don't know. It is brought down that Rav Yosef Chaim, that at various times in his life, he would sometimes say, maybe Rav Yosef Chaim was right. Since, in other words, there were times that Rav Kook was very discouraged because he didn't see the shinoyim that he thought he would see. He didn't see the mapechos that he thought he would see. In other words, what happened sometimes was, instead of people becoming more religious, they were more confirmed that they could be secular and he'll like them anyway, as opposed to being challenged to change. So there were times that he expressed charata, ambivalence. It's a complicated situation. Now, I want to point out that when Rav Kook became the Rav of Yerushalayim, that is when there was a breakaway of Kanoim, who refused to accept him as the Rav of Yerushalayim. And that breakaway of Kanayim founded the august organization that we know and love as the Eda HaCharedis. So the Eda HaCharedis was created as a breakaway because, really, over Rav Kook primarily, because they did not want to be Makabel Rav Kook as the Rav HaRashi. Now, most of these Kanaim had been Talmidim of Rav Yeshua Lev Diskin, who was Nifter before Rav Kook came. But Rav Yeshua Lev Diskin was a great Kanaim, he was a Rav of Brisk before the Beis Halevi. And they were very Kanaistic, and they didn't like Rav Kook's approach to Zionism, they didn't like Rav Kook's approach to Hedger Mechira, they didn't like Rav Kook's approach to feminism, whatever the issue was, they didn't like it. And they started a separate Kehila system with a separate Beis Din, called the Eda Charedis, and the first head of the Eda Charedis was Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, who in fact had been a Talmud, a very close Talmud of Rav Yeshua Leib Diskin. Now, the thing you have to know is, Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld happened to be a very good friend of Rav Kook. They loved each other, they were very close to each other, they had different hashkafas, they had a machlekes l'shem shemayim. In fact, Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld always called Rav Kook the Yaffa Rav, because he said to Rav Kook, you're perfect for Yaffa. One-to-one, you can be makariv people, small, hip down, you can talk to people, you can work with people, you're makariv shem shamayim, but when it comes to politically running the Medina, running the country, in terms of the general hashkafa, Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld felt there was a danger. Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld was succeeded by the first Rav Dushinsky, etc. And that's the Eda Charedis. Now, what eventually happened was that the Eda Charedis on some level became more Kanoistic, and even in Rav Kook's lifetime, they did not always follow Rav Yosef Chaim's Hanhaga of Derech Eretz to Rav Kook. And in placards and newspaper articles, Rav Kook was often Mavuza, he was vilified. Rav Kook was never responded in kind. He had the shita of Anolavim, V'Einam, Elvim. And there were times that Gedolim put out counter-machos against the denigration of his kavod. But Rav Yosef Chaim himself was a very, very close friend of Rav Kook, although he would not talk to him publicly that much because they had to be separated. But privately, they had a great humor. And in fact, in the early years of before World War I, when Rav Kook was still the Afarav, Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld and Rav Kook, plus a number of other rabbanim, went on a very famous, although it's not so known today, a very famous tshuva campaign, where they visited all the little villages and moshavim and kibbutzim throughout Eretz Yisrael. This is 1904. And, who was living? I mean, there's all these little kibbutzes, and 99% were not religious. I mean, once in a while they would find, like, one Shomer Shabbos guy, up north somewhere. And they talked about kashrus, and Shabbos, and trumas, and maisrus. And the leaders of that campaign were Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld and Rav Kook. And Rav Kook was the main speaker. You know, he was able to relate well to these secular Zionists. And they made many Bali Tshuva. They didn't become Kailal people. And Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld always remembered this. And he says that Rav Kook had such a gift for Kira V'chaykin. But it just shouldn't be like the general hashkafa of the Rabbanut and the like. So this is the basic idea of what's going on. But again, it's miyusin on the, what's called, the Zohar calls, Sheichad L'Satan, that the Kaichas of Tumah are sometimes placated by Taiv that is covered up by Ra. But if you recognize the Taiv emerges and is Mevatel the Ra. That was Rav Kook's Shita. Let me just mention that Rav Kook had, on one hand you had the Eidah Haredes, but there were many, many Chassidic people who didn't join the Eidah Haredes. Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer did not join the Eidah Haredes. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank did not join the Eidah Haredes. Right, so there were Gedolim on the other side as well. So Gedolim were not monolithic in this particular issue. Yeah. Yeah, you want to say okay, so here's the thing. Rav Kook has many Svarim. Rav Kook has Svarim of Shailos and Shuvas. Rav Kook has Svarim on Agarata. Rav Kook has Svarim of Machshavas, Kabbalah, and the like. And Rav Kook's Svarim are very complicated because there are a lot of different themes he emphasizes. He emphasizes Zionism. He emphasizes feminism. He emphasizes, though, the idea of a few things. He also emphasizes the notion of morality, of treating everybody with respect, even Goyim. So the truth of the matter is there are different pieces of his hashkafa. And when Rav Kook was Nifter, among the Dati Liumi Chevra that looked to Rav Kook as the Yesod of hashkafa, different people picked up different pieces. There are some people who picked up the piece that the Iker Zach is Binyan Haaretz, and that brings the Geula. And if that means you kick out the Arabs, or if that means you wage war against the Arabs, so be it. There are others who picked up the Machshava that Rav Kook wrote, that you have to live with the Arabs in Shalom. I talk about those things as well. So Rav Kook has, from a Dati Liumi perspective, not so much from our perspective, Rav Kook has a contested legacy, because there are those that see him as the ultimate radical Zionist, in which Bias Haaretz is more important than anything else, Binyan Haaretz. There are those that look at him as the universalist, that says you have to show respect to Goyim and Arabs and, you know, recognize their rights. There are those who look at him in terms of Shomer Mitzvahs, because he talks about Halacha. Right? Everyone's taking a different piece and they're emphasizing it. So what happened in particular in the Dati Liumi community, I'll just mention two shitas. Rav Kook only had, he had a daughter, he had a few daughters, but only one son. His son was Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook. And Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook became the Rosh Hashiva of Merkas Harav. And Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook's tfisa of his father was the Iker Chashivas of holding on to Eretz Yisrael no matter what. And thus, the miflaga that's called Gush Emunim, that was radically against any territorial concession, even B'makam B'Kuach Nefesh, which was opposed by Gedolim like Rav Shach, Rav Adi Yosef, and the like, who felt that you're allowed to give land if it's going to make peace. He said it's absolutely usher. You cannot give up a single inch of land, because if Binyan Haaretz is Makariv Geula, how can you go backwards and destroy Geula? So that was his sheet. And if that means the Arabs get kicked out, the Arabs get kicked out. Now, one reason why he was not Makubal was because Gedolim like Rav Shach, for example, took the position that even if Yishev Eretz Yisrael was a mitzvah, it's nitcha because of Pikuach Nefesh, and the Mela, Pikuach Nefesh, Shikulim are relevant. Now, that doesn't mean you should give things back. I mean, usually it doesn't work, but it's a theoretical idea that if you'd be matzah lives. Now, another Dati Lumi Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Yehuda Amital, heard of him, he was the Rosh Hashiva of Gush Etzion, of the Raron Lichtenstein's Yeshiva. He had a different view. He was a Talmud of of at least Rav Kook. I mean, not face-to-face Talmud, but he absorbed that Hashkafa. And he said that the Iker in Rav Kook was covered Abrius, to be mechabed everybody, to not, you know, be violent, not to impose your shita on somebody else. So you have to make shalom until Mashiach comes. So he was very much in favor of territorial concessions. So what I'm saying is there were a lot of chilukei deis in how to apply Rav Kook's hashkafa as well. So on one hand, Rav Yehuda Kook was the ben yachid of Rav Kook. On the other hand, some say he was not the best Talmud of Rav Kook. You know, so that's why there were different issues as well. Yeah.
What point
does
Rashi
mean
the Mizrahi? The Orthodox, like, hitch onto Mizrahi, or is that a Shoyer
Shoyer? Well, what happened was Mizrahi was started in Europe, and the original members of Mizrahi were regular Rabbonim in Europe. In fact, the Rav of Mea Sharim, Rav Yosef Gershon Horowitz, there's a street in Mea Sharim after him, was the head of Mizrahi in Eretz Israel. But Mizrahi became primarily a modern Orthodox organization, really after the formation of the Eda Charedis and the like, where many of the more right-wing Russian yeshivas went against the idea of the Zionists. Okay, maybe we'll one more sure on this, but I just wanted you to have a little hakdama as to a very, very complicated philosophy. And the reason why, so Bekitzer, let me just say a very, very simple reason. The reason why Rav Kook's Hashkafa is not so much taught in regular yeshivas is really because it's complicated, it's contradictory. There are stiras, because there are different things that are brought to the forefront at different times, and it can be prone to misapplication and misunderstanding. The fundamental yesaitis of Achdus, of Avas Yisrael, and Avas Eretz Yisrael, that's pretty Muslim. I mean, those nekudas are things that we would all agree to. But the notion of the Yiskarvus to Rishayim, the notion of seeing the good even in things that are bad, and trying to be makir the goodness in that bad, those are things that are controversial. Member of Chaim, I mean, you can see, by the way, why he was closer to the Nesiv than Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. I mean, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik's whole point was, he said it was a hard v'al yavor to work with a Zionist who was not from, because you're machaber to Rishayim. Rav Kook didn't even look at it that way. Rav Kook didn't even say, you're allowed to work with a Russia. That wasn't the question. He says, it's not a Russia. Well, you have to be makir the taif. That's within it. So, as I say, it's a controversial hashkafa, but at least you should hear about it once in your life, just to get a sense, just to get a gisha of what he was. But the point that you have to remember, though, he was an extraordinary person. He was a gadol in ruchnius. He was a great tzaddik. And except for the extreme kanoim that even the gedolim were mevata, people, even the people who were misnage to his shita, were makir. There was a godless haruach in him. So it's important, because sometimes you hear Bizman Hazeh, you hear Zolzulim. I'll give you one example. Rav Shlomo Zalman, in his Sefer on Shemitah, is against the Hetzer Mechira, as you would say. You know, he says not to be silent on the Hetzer Mechira, but he has a number of simanim where he says that Mi'ikar Adin, it's good. Mi'ikar Adin, it's good. And when the last edition of the Sefer was published after he was Nifter, those simanim were taken out. Those simanim were taken out. Now there's the simanim where he validated, at least with the Evet, the Hetzer Mechira. The Sefer, one of his Svarim, had a Haskama from Rav Kook, a Sefer he had written, you know, many, many years ago. And when they reprinted it, they took out that Haskama. Now, these things happen. These things are going on. And you see what an avla it is. Now, one time they took out the Haskama in Rav Shlomo Zalman's lifetime, and he refused. He says, if you don't put it back in, I'm withdrawing the Sefer. So in his lifetime, they had to put it back in. When they did it after his death, they took it out again. You know, so you have to know that these things do happen. It was a funny thing, though. It was a very, very funny thing, because there was a question of copyright. The family had the Sefer, and they reprinted it, and they took out the Simanim on the Hetzer Mechira, but apparently the family didn't realize that the copyright had expired, so somebody else was able to republish the Sefer in the original format. So there are two different editions. Each one has a mila, by the way. When the family put out a new one, they added some money. So you can get a newer one with some hisafas, but minus the Hetcher Mechira stuff, and you can get an old one with the Hetcher Mechira minus the hisafas. You actually need two different versions of Madani Aretz on Shemitah. Okay.